Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. For 40 years now, the Limark Technical Net, in one form or another, has been doing its thing. These days, every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on W2VL and the other Limark repeater in Selden, give you the Limark Technical Net. For most of those years, it was done under the guidance of Dick, K2RIW, who unfortunately became a silent key a few years ago, and so we continue this Technical Net in his memory with the hope that we all can learn some more things and educate other people of these things and just have some fun. So with that in mind, let me drop for a second and I will give you our usual link. Okay, if you need to reach me and you can't do it via this repeater, you can use email. That would be either for mailbag type questions that normally people ask during the Technical Net, but if you can't get onto it, then you can email it to me and we'll try our best. Or if you have a topic that you would either like to discuss yourself or be part of a discussion or hear a discussion on. So that's available. And also puzzles. We always are looking for interesting, mind-stretching puzzles of a technical nature. So if you have something that you think might scratch our neural itches, then please submit it to me. Or if you'd like me to ask Paul to take a look at some space or NASA-related thing, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Of course, if you want to directly email Paul, he's available at spacenetreport@gmail.com. I also have a link page. These are all kinds of interesting articles that I've read through the week. Good, interesting topics, and I share it with you people on my link page. Right now, I think the website is down, unfortunately. It's going through some rehab, but hope real soon. When it's into your browser, roy.gs.com, and that'll get you that link page once you... chat room. Head on through Echo Link. You type. Also, like the archive site, where he has archived the Technical Net going as far back as September of 2006. Let me drop for a second and I'll tell you our plans for tonight.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul.
Okay, one other thing, I just want to make sure if anybody hears anything they're not supposed to hear, you should send an email to rfi@limark.org. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Yes, indeed. If you hear something that doesn't belong there, go to the input, get a signal strength from it, and give all that information and send it to that email address. Anyway, plans for tonight is just another routine technical net. Unfortunately, don't have any puzzles or presentations planned by anyone. So it's just going to be you, me, and Paul. We'll ask for any technical questions. Hopefully the first few questions will be amateur radio related. We can stretch out and talk about any aspect of science and technology if you want. We can even touch upon medicine if you're so inclined, but keep in mind that we do not diagnose nor treat on the radio. So, that should take us to about hopefully 10:50, and then we'll turn it over to Paul WS2N for the SpaceNet report, which will get us to about 11 o'clock, and then I'll return and wish you all well and call it a TechNet. So that's the plan. If the universe allows us to, the repeater works, my radio works, and my larynx works. So that's the plan. Anyone out there with any questions or comments for the TechNet, please give me your first name and your call sign.
82OGB Mobile. I got something for you. I might have asked you this before, but I'm going to ask you once again.
Okay, Craig, you're on the top of the list. Let's see if we have any other people who want to be put on the list. Anyone else out there with any questions or comments, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Curtis DeGarmish, KC2DAW, reporting.
Well, thank you very much. Anyone else out there with any questions or comments tonight, give me your first name and your call sign.
Rich, W2BC.
Okay, got Rich down there. Anyone else want to put their name down? We'll still be taking names later on, but if you want to get an early position on the... on the TechNet, so give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, well, hopefully things will liven up as time goes on. Craig, what's your question or your comment for tonight?
I will give it out there in about 10 seconds. I am not going to be mobile anymore. I'm going to switch sources right now, so just give me 5 seconds. My HT, are you able to hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Craig.
Okay, so, a couple hours ago I bought myself another gooseneck because I've tried this before and I couldn't really figure it out, so I ended up just chucking it, but now I actually want to get back into it. So, a couple days ago I met somebody in Blue Point that had that gooseneck hooked up under the car seat, and I might be able to do it. It's just, again, what kind of Allen key does that bolt take? I think it takes a star, does it?
I do not know. It's probably not that difficult to figure out. If you own one, you can just take a look and see whether the edges are flat and it's just a regular hexagon, or whether they're pointed. And so that would be a different thing.
If I actually do have a hexagon somewhere, I'm going to have to look. But yeah, what I want to do is I want to change my setup a little bit. I want to have my dual bander on top of my HF, so that way if I ever do choose to listen to HF, but I'm not really going to transmit in the car, so that way I don't have to like go to the beach and then when I'm done, when I'm in the house, just take the HF rig and put it in my house. And HF rigs are not very cheap to get. But it's just a little thought, because I also want to do a little modification where I add something so I can actually have two radios, one on top of another, because technically this mount supports only one. But I actually have a trick up my mind that I can make it work with two.
Okay, there are a lot of different designs that are out there for different radios. I've seen where you can kind of bolt one on top of another. You just have to make sure that whatever is supporting it is strong enough to take the weight, and you don't want things to snap off if you abruptly break and all of a sudden some heavy, expensive piece of equipment is going to fly across your car.
Yeah, but I don't see that happening. I'm going to get this thing in like 3 days. I just placed the order. Last one also. I ordered it from eBay, but it's one of those gooseneck mounts, and it actually supports the TM71A and one other Kenwood model, but if you get the right mount for it, since technically it has a ball head on it, you really can have any radio fit on it. But yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. It's just a matter of if I can get that bolt free or not, and then just slip it under, and I'm basically good. Test it out, and that'll basically be it. And then it'll stay that way until I get, hopefully, a new car, which I'd like to get in a couple of years from now, and then I can get a little bit of a cleaner setup.
Okay, you sound like you have a plan. Depending upon how much money you like to spend on things, I bought, I think it was iFixit, kind of has an almost universal screw kit where it has all kinds of security and non-security bits, you know, so that you don't kind of get stuck and have to order a special screwdriver in order to loosen or tighten something. So you might want to consider looking into something along those lines.
I wonder if Home Depot, Harbor Freight, or any other hardware store perhaps has something like that, or if I could just also order it off Amazon, because the gooseneck I ordered from eBay. Amazon, you can't really buy all the stuff you normally can get off of eBay, so that's what I'm going to do. That's all I got for now. If I have anything else in mind, I will give you a shout. So ACGCS Net Control, KD2OGB.
Okay, very good, Craig. Just as an afterthought, I'm sure Amazon sells almost everything. Home Depot and Harbor Freight, they'll sell you individual kits of screwdrivers and collections of bits. Whether or not they stock something that includes everything, because there's so many different varieties of screwdriver out there now, because everyone has to be special customers to get into their equipment. So Apple started designing special screw bits and such, and everyone else has kind of jumped on that. So Amazon, you could definitely find it. If you try any of these big box stores, you'll probably find subsets. You won't find as many different bits. But I wish you good luck, and I hope everything works out with your new boots. Next.
Make it work. Thanks. 2OGB.
Okay, very good. Anyone with any further comments on that particular subject?
WSLM. What was he looking for? Talk head? Screw?
I'm not quite sure. I think he's not exactly sure what kind of a screw loosens it. It is probably a torque, because I can't imagine why they would try to use a non-standard or security type of a bit. So it's probably going to end up being either a torque or one of those pointed variations on a torque wrench.
Okay, I know Harbor Freight has, you can buy an assortment of different sizes, you know, and then, you know, it depends on what kind of an adapter you have, you know. If you actually have a, you know, hex adapter where you can slide it into a, you know, into another socket that's on your, on another screwdriver type of thing, you know, you can just plug them in, you know, and pick one. Or you could, you know, actually get the ones, you know, the regular set. But yeah, Harbor Freight is good for that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I have a collection of Stanley, both metric and American units that I use. But I, like I said, I also have a company called iFixit, which is really into, you know, opening up laptops and cell phones and such. So they also include all of the more esoteric security bits. Companies like Apple don't want us to go to Harbor Freight and be able to get a screwdriver to open up their equipment. So you have to be a little bit more devious for those things.
Subscribe to the Long Island.
Okay, well, you know, to send away for it, you know, you actually have to know which torque it is. You know, that could be a pain in the neck.
you know, you try to figure out which one it is. There's so many different variations. You're better off getting the assortment. You know, from a store like Harbor Freight, or Home, you know, I'm sure Home Depot has it as well, or even Mold. Back to you, Roy.
That's why I said it might be a star.
Yeah, okay, well, that would be a talk.
I'm going to go online in just a couple of minutes and look this up just to make sure. I mean, because I'd rather not try to guess it and get the wrong thing.
Well, yeah, in the long scheme of things, probably having both types of screwdrivers will be useful, because eventually you'll need one or the other. So a good collection of standard sizes serves a lot of purposes. But yeah, if you can go to eBay and you can find out, there should be any reason why they're hiding it from you. Most equipment like this, they usually throw in one that fits the slot, because it costs maybe about 10, 15 cents to manufacture those things. So most of my equipment, where I've needed to adjust things, they threw in one of those bent L-shaped bits to be able to accomplish that.
I'm going to go online. I just got to my computer, so I'll give it back to, I can't remember who had it. I think it was Paul, I believe. I could be wrong, but I think it might be him. I'm going to look this up. I'll be right back. KD2OGB.
Okay, very good. So we'll move on to Rich, W2BZ. What's your question or your comment for tonight, Rich?
Well, I harking back to last week, and I want to see if I have this carrier wave, carrier signal thing straight in my mind. My voice now is creating a signal. That signal gets combined with a carrier wave. Do I have that correct so far?
Yes, the question ultimately is what's the manner of that combination, determined by whether you're doing a frequency modulation or an amplitude modulation.
Okay, so what's the stage in the transmitter that converts, or let me put it this way, does my voice either frequency modulate the carrier or amplitude modulate the carrier, depending on what type of transmitter I'm talking into?
Well, in a way, yes, because theoretically you could have one transmitter that has switches to switch from FM to AM to single sideband and what have you, but the modulation circuit will determine by its design how it is modulating the carrier.
And the carrier wave would be the same whether it's AM, single sideband, or FM, is that correct? The carrier wave doesn't change. It's just the type of modulation of the, I'll call it the information signal, the type of modulation that creates the mode, is that correct?
Yes, it is constant in amplitude and in frequency.
Did you say the carrier wave is constant in amplitude and frequency?
Yes, unmodified, unmodulated, it is a constant feature.
Okay, now, the reason for the carrier wave is information signal, let's say the sound of my voice, I'm calling that the information signal, needs to be combined with the carrier wave, is that the frequency response of my voice is just too wide for any reasonable antenna system to transmit without the carrier. Is that correct?
I wouldn't call it frequency response. If you were to take your audio signal and feed it into an antenna and try and transmit it, it would be a very, very, very low frequency RF transmission. It would be very inefficiently transmitted because antennas aren't large enough to be able to transmit a signal that's hovering around 1,000 cycles per second. And so it would be inefficient, and also it would interfere with everyone else's 3,000 hertz bandwidth range audio transmission if anyone was able to accomplish that. So what you're doing is you are using the carrier wave as the means of transmitting and receiving the signal, and you are embedding the information onto that. It doesn't necessarily have to be an audio signal. It can be ones and zeros in a binary information. It's any information. It just so happens when we're talking about phones that you're embedding that approximately 3,000 hertz audio signal envelope onto the carrier, which is carrying the signal and making it possible for you to efficiently transmit it and have it received someplace.
Maybe get a handbook and read it, they get a radio license.
The process of embedding the information signal with the carrier signal is called what?
Modulation.
Okay, so what circuit actually, I guess the modulator, it's either an, you said it's switchable, you know, some like my HF transceiver can do, you know, upper sideband, lower sideband, FM and AM and CW. So I guess whichever mode that you want to transmit in uses a separate modulator, whether it's a frequency modulator or an amplitude modulator, to modulate the carrier wave, correct?
Yes. For AM and FM, you would use a balanced modulator to get the single sideband extracted out of it. And it depends. It's all of these different modulating block diagrams of electronic circuits will modulate the carrier signals oscillating, you know, signal. And depending upon the design of the modulator, it will it'll change the carrier wave's amplitude or frequency.
Tentation.
Yes, Leslie?
Give some kind of example, maybe saying that we have different bins with the clay, and you take just one bin, this is the clay, and you start to modulate that bin in is at the certain number, at the 3500, 3.5 megahertz, right? So that's the number of the bin. Now you're trying to model it with your hand. You're trying to make something with that clay that is in this bin. Now whatever you do with this, you still have the same number. So the frequency doesn't change. And carrier frequency is always bigger or higher than the frequency that is used for modulation. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, for a whole bunch of different reasons, but by modulating the carrier wave, you're also producing sidebands on either side, so that further complicates things. The whole point is that you are limited. You're limited by the amount of information that you can transfer, or otherwise known as the symbol rate, by the bandwidth of the transmission. So obviously, if you are trying to transmit the information from a 3K signal with a symbol rate of a 3K symbol, signal, you're going to need a carrier wave that's wider than that to cover that that 3,000 cycles. If you somehow try to stuff 3,000 cycles worth of information into something that only went up to, say, 500 hertz, you wouldn't have the bandwidth capable of carrying that symbol rate. So kind of by definition, your carrier wave always has to be higher up than your modulating signal in order to contain the modulating signal.
Okay, and but then you get into, like you said, a sideband. It creates an upper and lower sideband, and the carrier gets suppressed. But if the carrier is doing such an important job, how can you suppress it?
In the case of single sideband, the carrier is producing the sideband. Once the carrier produces the sideband, though, they offer very little benefit to you transmitting or receiving, because the carrier itself still only supplies a kind of bookmark. It's the frequency position is known by the carrier, but if you're clever, you can get rid of the carrier, which gets rid of half of the energy and doesn't get rid of any of the information. Then you can get rid of one of the two sidebands, because they're both mirrors of each other, and simply send one sideband. And if you're clever, you inject the carrier frequency back into the receiver, and that generates the necessary heterodyning of detecting it back to its audio frequency, where then you run it through some audio amplifiers and you listen.
Okay, so, but the carrier doesn't go to zero, does it? I mean, it's not totally suppressed. Am I right?
In the case of single sideband, the carrier is completely suppressed. Sorry, Wesley, didn't understand that at all.
I just, so 3% is left. This is 3, enter here. A, like America, modulation standard.
Okay, I was only able to get a small portion of that. You do not need to have any of the carrier remaining. Like all things, you can't do 100% of anything. So in the real world, there's a little bit of carrier that gets through, but it's pretty much meaningless. You still have to inject a local oscillator signal into your received single sideband signal. Otherwise, you won't be able to understand single sideband. When I was a kid back in the 60s, I only had a transistor shortwave radio. And it did AM and FM, but it didn't do single sideband. And so I discovered that if I took an even cheaper transistor radio and used its IF mixer oscillator as a B frequency oscillator, I would be able to kind of adjust it to understand the single sideband signal. So without injecting another frequency into your single sideband reception, you wouldn't be able to understand what the people were talking about.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, right now I did.
Okay, put antenna on the repeater. I said 90% of the, 97% of the carrier is suppressed. 3% is always left. That is being called A, like America, 3J, standard. Enter here.
Okay, I mean, I guess that's a specification. But again, ultimately, it's sort of immaterial as far as a single sideband receiver is concerned. If you had 3% of the carrier or 4% of the carrier or 1% of the carrier, you still have to inject a local oscillator into your detector to detect a single sideband back into an audio signal.
Roy, what's the nature or the composition of the sidebands? When you say a sideband, are you talking about two side signals, one above and one below the carrier frequency?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. What it amounts to is if you were to inject into your single sideband transmitter an audio tone of 1,000 hertz, you would generate two little spikes. You would generate one spike at minus 1,000 hertz below the carrier frequency and one 1,000 kilohertz above the carrier frequency. And as you add different frequencies to that signal, you get other little spikes at that sum and difference on either side of the carrier wave.
Okay, so modulator, does that work, correct?
I only heard half of that transmission, so try again.
It's the single sideband modulator that creates the two sidebands, is that correct?
Yes, what happens is it extracts out most of the carrier wave, leaving the upper and lower sideband, and then a filter removes either the upper or the lower one. And so you're left with only a single sideband going into the amplification and transmission circuitry.
Right. And now it's all clear. I just wish I had a visceral sense of how the information signal is actually combined with the carrier. You know, how that is actually done. I don't have a visual sense of it, if you know what I mean.
MAV?
Sorry, WA2NAV. I'm not sure if the gentleman, good at trigonometry, but a double sideband modulator is nothing more than multiplying two cosine waves together. Let's say you had that 1 kilohertz tone. That could be cosine 2 pi 1 kilohertz times time, and the carrier would be 2 pi FC times time. If you go on the internet and look up the identity for the product of two cosines, and you'll get the sum and difference out. That's how the double sideband modulator works, and if you filter out one, you get single sideband. Over.
Okay, thank you very much, Mark. I think rather than kind of settle with the single sideband's a little bit more complex than something as simple as an amplitude modulated transmitter, and so maybe the best approach is to look at that circuit rather than say single sideband, which is a wee bit more complicated. And with an amplitude modulation, just think of it as a constant frequency oscillator, but with a variable gain control, and the audio signal is changing the gain of that particular oscillating circuit. So when the amplitude of the audio envelope is high, you're getting a lot of amplitude of this carrier wave. And when the amplitude of the audio envelope is low, you're getting a negligible amplitude of that carrier wave. So maybe if you start with something like amplitude modulation, it'll make more sense.
Okay, well, amplitude modulation, let's just go music. Press piano key or an organ key, A440, generating a 440 hertz carrier that propagates the room. If, let's say, depending on the organ, how, you know, they usually everybody knows about ACSR, envelope on a note, that's amplitude modulation. And then the other thing with the tremolo, where it gets louder and softer, that's AM on a particular music note. Think of every music note as a carrier, and you can put a shape on it. That's AM.
Okay, yeah, you can look upon it that way. I was trying to bring it back, though, to a transmitter as opposed to musical instruments, because in that case, you're not kind of, well, I guess to a degree, you're modulating it, so you're adding some information, but, you know, it's not quite the same as taking it to a completely different frequency and a completely different phenomena. You're going from pressure waves of acoustic pressures into electromagnetic waves.
Enter your shift.
Yes, Leslie?
Yeah, so the previous is trying to explain it in form of the bean at a certain number. But the example with mathematical explanation actually made me to represent the physical explanation. So sidebands are produced during amplitude modulation. A modulation signal of frequency omega m is superposition on the carrier wave of frequency omega c. The resultant is passed through a square law device and band pass filter, which generates sidebands from omega c minus omega m to omega c plus omega m. So these modulated wave carriers, this magically related wave carries the information. That would be a physical explanation of a single sideband. Enter your shift.
Anybody out here?
Now, that certainly is a curious question. Nevertheless, I don't know. I'm trying as best I can to simplify this, and I understand the accurate descriptions being used. But when you start to throw out trigonometry to people, and when you start to talk about phase angles and such, I'm not quite sure. The problem is that the people who understand what you're talking about already know what you're talking about. It's the people who don't understand what we're talking about that we're trying to explain what we're talking about.
I don't know if I was heard before. Well, omega is 2 pi.
Anybody down here?
Well, the reason I bring up trigonometry is that's a great math. I thought everybody would know about it, but you want to make AM analogy, it's really down, you're modulating signal, you actually add to it, and then you multiply it again with that modulator. Your carrier gets multiplied by a constant of your carrier, and then your a sideband, which is the modulating frequency, it will generate two sidebands. You end up with a carrier with two sidebands. But I ran into this at work. Curiously enough, when I wrote an article that was simplifying stuff for IEEE, they told me it was too simple for their reasons. So come on the air here, it's too complicated, and IEEE say it's too simple. I don't know what to say. But I just assumed that everybody made it through a lengthy math and understood the identity. Math is too much and it's just corrupt. That's what you say.
Hey, I hear.
Dr. Roy, did you hear my previous translation?
Yeah, Wesley, I heard you. I'll get back to you in a second. I just want to touch on Mark. I appreciate your participation. I appreciate your comments. And I agree with you, it's a good description. The problem is, you know, I use this phrase, you got to kind of know your audience. When you're writing something for the IEEE, you tend to be writing for people who have a degree in electrical engineering. Those guys are much more deep into what's going on. A lot of amateur radio operators don't really, unfortunately, refer their trig functions that well. They don't think in terms of trig functions that frequently. So you got to kind of know your audience. If you're talking to a bunch of electrical engineers, I would agree with what those guys told you of go to trigonometric functions.
KC2FIU.
To that knowledge, you know, when you're talking to people on these type of nets where it's a very broad-based education, some people are electrical engineers, occasionally chemists and physics and all kinds of things, but some people don't even quite remember their Ohm's law. So you kind of have to aim someplace in the middle. At least that's my philosophy. You know, everyone to their own.
Yeah, okay.
I agree with that.
Really, to explain, talking on the air is difficult. You know, and I know, you had a Zoom meeting and you had drew a picture. That would explain it to be all over. It's difficult to put pictures into words. And that's the problem. WA2MAB.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely, Mark. I mean, that's where the phrase, a picture is worth a thousand words. There are a lot of different subjects that are not impossible to explain with some nicely rendered illustrations that are pretty much impossible to do just with words. You know, even something like a Smith chart. I have been trying to scratch my head and come up with a way of explaining Smith charts without a single picture. And I have yet to come up with anything particularly useful. So yeah, a lot of times the problem is that as much as we love radio and talking, sometimes a picture is worth a thousand words.
Yeah, Smith chart, that's another thing you gotta see. That's a graphical solution and a mapping problem. Unless you know what it is, it's the same issue. Trigonometry is really complex. It's a real elegant solution to expressing complex numbers, and that's beyond the realm of non-engineering. That's always a problem. Unless you prepare notes for each technique and everybody downloads and looks at it. So the figure, you know, 4-1 and that's the carrier. 4-2 is the modulated carrier and so on. But it's difficult trying to get a verbal description of something you have in your mind. With a couple of diagrams, or even better yet, I have a whole bunch of simulations that you can generate in Oxford or even in Excel that would help. Radio really isn't the medium for that. It really needs a little more support. That's great.
Yeah, Mark, I agree with you 100%. The unfortunate reality is we're doing this on a net. We're doing this on radio. It has been tried in the past for the technical net to offer downloadable material. Usually, it was not really done. I think maybe two people in the crowd were curious enough to look at those things. So the best that I could offer is my link page. And even though I mentioned the link page is not really meant for illustrations, although if there are optical illusions, which of course you can't get across on a radio in any way, shape, or form, I link to those so that they could look at it themselves. But I still bump into people who, even though I mention the link page every week, are blissfully unaware of the link page. So, yeah, we're just going to have to stick with Audible. But, the trick is to try and figure out the simplest, most accurate analogy that can be verbally exchanged, and not assume even that people remember the stuff that they were taught in high school, because a lot of people haven't. They don't keep up with it, and if you don't use it, you sort of lose it. You know, I mean, not everyone remembers good old Sokotoa.
Chris?
Yes, Leslie?
What is the function of the band pass filter used in modulator for obtaining AM signal, since we talking about single sideband which comes from AM? That is my question, and to XM.
I'm not quite sure what the question is. Something about a band pass filter used in a single sideband modulator.
The question was, because we were talking about single sideband, I said, how about if you go to the beginning of it, which is AM? So my question is, what is the function of the bandpass filter used in modulator for obtaining AM signal, both in TX and RX?
I don't know what the specs are for that.
But usually, in modulating systems, you're modulating signal, whether it's a band of audio, it's usually, they call it band limited. So usually it can have a low pass filter on audio to restrict the band, because the audio goes from 0 to 3 kilohertz. And then when you modulate that, you have a side bands are band limited, and then you can have a band pass filter after the balanced modulator to just pick out the side bands. What they usually do is you don't want to have two side band filters, so what they'll do is they'll move the carrier, offset it, so you can just use one filter. The upper and lower
sides. Yes, that is a very much good answer. The main function of the such filter in the transmitter, if we're talking about the transmitter, is to limit the bandwidth of the output signal to the minimum necessary to convey data at the desired speed. And in the receiver, a band pass filter allows signals with a selected range of frequencies to be heard or encoded and to appear.
Okay, I'm not quite sure how that goes back to Rich's question. I assume it's a secondary question that you came up with that you have the answer to. Rich, any other comments?
Oh, it's pretty clear now. You know, I was thinking when you were talking about visualizing, all this stuff would probably be instantly understandable, you know, looking at a scope, an oscilloscope, and looking at the different, you know, signals and how they interact with each other. That's the visual part that I'm missing. But as far as understanding it, I'm pretty sure I got it now, Roy. Thanks.
Okay, I mean, theoretically, probably if you Googled amplitude modulation oscilloscope, you would see dozens and dozens of illustrations of a modulated AM signal on an oscilloscope, where you would see that there's a lot of very narrow sine waves, and then kind of creating a wider envelope of amplitude, it would be the audio signal that's modulating that carrier. So if you Google it, there's probably loads of pictures with that demonstration.
I do have a last question, Roy. When somebody sends a dead carrier, the term dead carrier, that means that the carrier wave is not being modulated by the information signal, for lack of a better term. Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly what it means. You could do that on CW. You could do that on amplitude modulation. You could do that on frequency modulation. You cannot do it on single sideband, though, because without a modulating signal, you won't get any significant output.
Okay, so if you're doing it on FM and AM, and you're just holding, you know, key down to a microphone, that means that the cap is not being manipulated and is still full strength, so to speak?
Well, I won't quite say full strength because that alludes to it being amplitude modulated. I'll say more vaguer that it is a constant in quality.
Okay, I got it. Thanks, Roy. Understood. Appreciate it. W2BC, back to net.
W2HL.
Yes, Howard.
There's a term called downward modulation, and I believe that as you speak, if you have the downward modulation, I think it reduces the carrier somewhat.
Okay, I'm more familiar with a balanced modulator, but there's probably circuits that do all kinds of interesting things.
No, I missed that. I was passing by some power line noise.
I was just saying that usually when the talk comes of a single sideband modulator, it's a balanced modulator. I'm not aware of a down modulator.
Well, there's a term that I've heard referring to in AM, downward modulation. I don't really know specifically what the term is like. I believe it has something to do with the reducing of the carrier upon modulation. It's not tuned properly or something like that. Maybe somebody else knows.
Okay, one second with the comment. Just from the chat room, John KD2BD had a comment. Also, he said that downward modulation is an indication of a transmitter problem. But I think it's GJE who wanted to make a comment.
Correct.
Okay, comment away.
When an audio signal modulates an RF carrier, it swings it positive and it swings it negative. If you're using too much modulation, what they say over modulation, you can go to a point where the carrier is completely brought to zero, which causes all kinds of splatter. Over.
Okay, would that splatter be called downward modulation?
I guess so. There are circuits where, and there is equipment where in the commercial field, you look at both the positive peaks and the negative peaks. There used to be allowed to over-modulate the positive peaks. I think FCC doesn't allow that anymore. So they had this equipment where they would look at the negative peaks, where they just were brought to a little bit before zero, but on the positive peaks, they were allowed to bring them, I think at one time, about 125% over.
Oh, okay. Thanks for that information, Ed. Any other comments on this subject? Yes, Leslie?
I cannot see the lobes. And carrier. And also left on a carrier. If you look at the spectrum of it's not easy to see the lobes. It's kind of tricky to visualize those two lobes and the carrier and to escape.
Okay, we lost about 50% of that transmission. The first half was very, very choppy. I'll give you a couple more words of wisdom from John KD 2BD from our chat room. He wrote, downward modulation is also known as negative carrier shift. So hope that adds to your font of information. But Wesley, as I said, I just caught most of the second half, not much of the first. Sorry, Wes, about 95% of that was lost.
Very much.
Okay. Well, once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Limar Technical Net. We're here, hopefully, to discuss interesting topics, to learn a couple of things, to teach a couple of things, and we're open for business. Anyone have any questions or comments tonight, please give me your first name and call sign.
Comment on what Wesley said.
Sure, Ed.
The little bit that I heard from Wesley, he said lobes. There are positive and negative lobes. The frequency of the lobes is the modulating signal. When you look at, you'll see this on an oscilloscope when you just look at the RF. Another way which they used to do is they take the audio, have the audio modulate the x-axis on the oscilloscope and the y-axis look at the RF and you get a triangle. And the whole idea was that the triangle didn't come to an actual point, that there was a little vertical there. And then compare the two verticals of the triangle, when it doesn't come to an exact triangle, that would be your percentage of modulation over.
Yeah, I wonder if you can hear me now.
Yes, I can.
About the versus network, the spectrum analyzer. And neither one would show two lobes and the carrier. So just seeing that kind of picture is quite tricky and tricky. Okay, did you hear me good or it was interruption in the middle?
It was understandable. There were some interruptions. There are a lot of different ways to visualize single sideband signals. Even on my pan adapter, I can recognize what is a symmetrical amplitude modulated signal or a symmetrical frequency modulated signal versus a asymmetrical upper sideband or lower sideband. And because the frequency distribution of transmissions tends to be heavy on the lower frequencies, you can sort of tell whether it's upper or lower sideband. Occasionally people are sending in the wrong sideband for a given ham band. So there's a whole bunch of different ways to visualize these things. More as technology evolves and allows us to incorporate it into radios these days.
Yeah, I can increase the power to 100.